This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The historic flooding from Florence has eased, but communities and environmentalists are just beginning to take stock of the damage it caused. With homes and roads still underwater, it remains a challenge to assess the damage, let alone start to repair it. Jason DeBruin is WUNC's data reporter. He's been visiting towns affected by Florence and joins me now. Welcome back, Jason.
Hi, Frank.
So tell us where we are. What kind of lingering effects are we seeing?
Well, we'll start with the road closures. There are still a couple, maybe 300 roads that are closed. Not the major ones, of course. I-40, 85, US 70, 74, these are all open. But some roads and even some bridges are still closed. So, you know, the thing to remember is if there's the road closed sign, do not drive around the blockade. Don't think that you're better than the road.
Right. And people have been getting back. A lot of people are still blocked, right? Can't get back to their homes. Some are and beginning to assess the damage.
That's
right?
True. Yeah. I think there are probably very few homes today that are still inaccessible, so to speak. But obviously, as people return to homes that have 2 or potentially even 3 feet of water in them for several days, I mean, you're talking, a lot to clean up.
And we're talking about this is, again, an extraordinary flood, as Matthew was. We're seeing these hundreds, sometimes thousand-year events now, back-to-back, which means people outside of a floodplain possibly and most likely didn't have insurance.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, look, few people even inside the floodplain have insurance. Mm-hmm. And so people outside of the floodplain certainly don't. I was down in Wallace, which was at one point the last stop off of I-40 that you could get to before the road was closed, and just chatted with people there. And I, you know, met this gentleman. His name is John Nemeth. And we tried to get to his house. He lives on a golf course. We tried to get to his house, literally couldn't get to about maybe 150 yards because the whole area was just completely flooded. So we had to sort of look over the fairway and all we could see is the back of his house and the water coming up about halfway up the windows.
Still,
at that point. That was almost a week ago, but, you know, still, it's pretty bad.
He was not able to get insurance. He talked to you about that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he said he didn't think he needed it. I mean, he's not even in the floodplain.
Right.
There are some lower-lying areas around his house and certainly around, you know, Wallace in general. There are some areas for the water to run to, but as you said, you know, when you have a once every quote-unquote 500-year flood, it goes to places where you're not expecting it.
And you met with Tracy Parker as well. Tell us about Tracy.
I did. This was a woman, a lower-income woman, and she said that their roof on their trailer was just completely, utterly ripped off. She was talking about seeing her son go back into his room as rain is literally dropping on his head and he's, you know, picking up a few of his belongings.
I don't have a home no more. I mean, my children don't have a home. We don't have nowhere to lay their head. I mean, that was their home. They wanted to go back, but I don't think they really understand that, you know, they can't because it's gone. It's gone.
Pender County resident Tracy Parker speaking with WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin, who's here with me now. And, of course, that stories like that are going to be played out over and over again in the coming months.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the downstream effects are serious. This woman, for instance, she and her husband and her 3 children are going to likely have to move in with either her parents or his parents. They're in a county over. Okay, maybe it's only 10, 15 miles, but that's a new school system. You know, that means new friends potentially. Never mind that it's, you know, you're living in tight quarters with people. Okay, so then whenever maybe they do look to move out, they'll probably have to rent. You know, obviously buy all new clothes, all kinds of, literally everything's brand new that they have to get. And it's just, you know, people who, it constantly seems that people that have so little to begin with are the ones that lose everything.
And whatever income stream they have has been disrupted. Now they move in with people who are in similar economic and financial straits. And now you've got 2 families together, but only 1 income stream, if that. And so you can see how this compounds itself, even as we are just barely out from under Matthew. Right. Now the environmental effects, because besides cleaning up neighborhoods and cities, real concern over contaminants in the water. Tell us about that.
Sure. So again, coal ash. I spent a few days down in Wilmington and actually got to go on the Cape Fear River. There's a group of environmental advocates called the Waterkeeper Alliance. Sometimes they're called the River Keepers. And they took me out in a little 16-foot aluminum boat, myself and another reporter, and we were out there and looking to see where the dam breaches were, where the berm breaches were, and we saw the water actually running over, clearly where it shouldn't have been, and in some cases we're able to look down and see what appeared to be coal ash just floating in the Cape Fear River.
Tell us about Matt Butler.
So Matt is one of these river keepers. He's a captain, and he was lamenting the fact that some of this could have been avoided. Obviously, Duke Energy has been digging out some of this coal ash, but from his perspective, it's been a pretty slow process.
We've got historic flooding from Hurricane Florence into an area that has chemicals and heavy metals that are just toxic to humans, and now all of that has been intermixed into a river that is flooding areas and homes where people are going to interact with those heavy metals and chemicals and really nasty things. And as that river water continues to subside, all of that coal ash will be there in the rivers. And we have no idea what the long-term effects are going to be to wildlife, to human impacts, to the environment from all of the spill that's happened during the storm.
That's Matt Butler, a riverkeeper, who spoke with WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin. Jason is with me now. Now, he's saying the coal ash is in the river. Actually, Duke Energy is saying that's not the case. What's the dispute here?
That's right. So the technicality of what Duke is saying is that they have measured their water tests, and they are not above permitted levels for heavy metals like mercury and arsenic. Now, maybe to back up, coal ash obviously comes from burned coal. You burn coal to create energy. When you have this ash and it has heavy metals bonded to the ash, including arsenic and mercury, and so of course that's dangerous to the environment. So it needs to be kept in a separate basin, hence the coal ash ponds. What Duke Energy is saying is that even though there were breaches in the coal ash pond and then also in Sutton Lake, which is sort of the divider between the coal ash pond and the Cape Fear River, even though there were breaches in both of those berms, not very much dangerous metals were actually leaked out of the coal ash pond into Sutton Lake and ultimately into the Cape Fear River. What they say you can see floating in the river is what are called cenospheres. This is another byproduct from coal that happens when it's burned, so it looks very much like coal ash. And actually, it is ash. I mean, it's burned coal is ash, of course. But what they say is that these cenospheres do not contain the same dangerous heavy metals as does, the other more commonly thought of coal ash. Okay, that's well and good, and Duke Energy says that. And the question from the Waterkeeper Alliance, from these environmentalists, is that you have done these water tests, you've taken the samples yourself, and you've tested them, you meaning Duke, have tested them at your facilities, your labs. We want to take our own samples, and more than that, we want DEQ, the state regulator, to take its samples. So the breach happened, after the hurricane. The Waterkeeper Alliance was out on the water on Friday, so a week ago tomorrow, they were out on the water Friday to take their samples, but we're frustrated that the state didn't get out on the water until Saturday. Now, we don't have either of those results back. The only results that we know that we have back as of, Thursday afternoon are the ones from Duke itself, and Duke itself says that it is within its permitted limits of these heavy metals. So what we're now waiting for is, A, the results back from the environmentalists, and B, even more importantly, the results back from the state regulators.
And the when and where is important, because if you took them too late or in a part of the river that is far downstream, for instance, it might not tell you the full story about what has potentially worked itself into groundwater.
And that's exactly what the water keepers are saying. Because there is so much water that has been dumped all over North Carolina, I mean, I'm sure you've heard that they've compared it to the amount of water that's in the Chesapeake Bay was dumped on North Carolina in just a matter of, 4 or 5 days, maybe not even. Because there was so much water that was dumped, even if you're there a day later, it could pretty significantly dilute the measurements that you take. And so that's why the Waterkeeper Alliance was out there on Friday, but are expressing frustration that DEQ didn't get out there until Saturday.
And, of course, there's also a concern about the remediation efforts that Duke has taken underway after the big spill that
right.
touched off all of our concern and got us to understand a little better what coal ash was, that those remediation efforts really haven't had happen quickly enough. And so here we are when Florence hits and things really still haven't materially improved.
That's exactly right. And that's another thing that, Matt Butler was saying is that I asked him directly what was going through his head as we were standing there at one of the breaches in the berms. And he sort of paused and he said, you know, really, it's almost a sadness because this could have been avoided. Certainly Duke is, to their credit, doing a good job of trucking out these massive truckloads of coal ash. But to Matt, he was saying it's not happening fast enough. And of course, had this basin, this coal ash basin, been completely emptied of all coal ash, well, okay, you would still have a breach and water would still get in there, but then it would mix with mud and stones and maybe some small residual coal ash, but certainly a much smaller amount had it all been dug up and taken away. And basically his overwhelming emotion, he said, it was just sort of sadness that this could have been avoided. Even at a major flood, this could have been avoided if the coal ash had been taken out more quickly.
Jason DeBruin, WNC's data reporter. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks very much.
You can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, history executed these women for their beliefs, and so did the people of France. As a matter of fact, a new play brings them back to life in a comedy that tackles feminism and politics, and we'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.